All right, so today we're going to dive deep into a Supreme Court case. It's one that's still shaping how we vote even today. It all comes down to how those lines get drawn on the map, for voting districts, and what happens when race becomes the main thing people consider when drawing them up.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So we're talking about Miller v. Johnson. It was decided in 1995. It's a landmark case all about racial gerrymandering.
Yeah.
Buckle up, because this one gets pretty wild.
I think what's really interesting about Miller v. Johnson is that it, forces us to think about this question. How do we make sure minority voters are represented fairly, but also make sure that all citizens are treated equally under the law? It's a tough one.
Right. It really is. And it's about those maps, the ones that determine our voting districts. And the question is, can you use race as the main factor when you're drawing up those districts? Let's go back in time, back to Georgia in the early 90s. So they'd just gotten a new congressional seat after the 1990 census. So it was time to redraw those district lines. Sounds pretty straightforward, right?
Sounds like it, yeah.
But that's where things take a turn.
Well, the Department of Justice, they actually rejected Georgia's first two redistricting plans.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
They said they didn't create enough districts where minority voters would have like a real voice, which is actually a key part of the Voting Rights Act.
Right. The Voting Rights Act, a landmark piece of legislation for sure. It was designed to protect minority voters, especially in the South, where there's that history of discrimination. So the DOJ, they could step in and say, nope, you got to go back and try again, Georgia.
Exactly. And that's where this case really starts to get interesting. So Georgia goes back to the drawing board and they come up with this new 11th district. And the shape of this thing, well, let's just say it definitely raised some eyebrows. We're talking a district that stretched over 260 miles. It connected Atlanta all the way to Savannah. And get this, they were connected by these super thin strips of land. It was definitely not compact.
Oh, and I'm trying to picture this. It sounds like someone just like zigzagged a highlighter across a map.
Yeah, that's a pretty good way to put it. It was pretty bizarre looking.
Was it really that strange?
Oh yeah, it really was. And that unusual shape, it immediately caused controversy. A lot of critics said that it was a classic example of what's often called Max Black districting. Basically, the idea is you pack as many black voters as possible into one district, which could, weaken their influence in the surrounding areas.
Okay. Yeah, I see how that would be a problem.
Yeah.
Georgia was trying to comply with the Voting Rights Act, right? That was their defense.
That's the heart of the legal battle, yeah. Five white voters from that 11th district, they filed a lawsuit. They said, hold on a second, this just isn't right. Their argument was that the state had put race above everything else when they were drawing those district lines,
Good.
and that violated their constitutional right to equal protection.
So you've got the Voting Rights Act on one side, which is all about protecting minority voters.
Right.
And on the other side, you've got the Equal Protection Clause, which says everyone has to be treated equally under the law.
Right.
Man, that's a tough one. No wonder this ended up in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it was a major, major showdown. And the court's decision in Miller v. Johnson had huge implications for how we think about redistricting even today. They basically laid down this, what they called the predominant factor test.
Okay, I gotta stop you right there. Break that down for me. What does predominant factor even mean? Sounds kind of lawyery.
Yeah, it's a bit jargony, I know. Basically, what it means is the courts, they can't just accept a district's racial makeup on its face. They have to dig deeper, look at the intent behind those lines. Like, was race the main reason this district looks the way it does? Or were there other, legitimate factors at play?
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But how do you actually prove intent? I mean, it's not like lawmakers are going to come right out and say, yep, we drew this district solely to help or hurt this particular racial group.
You're right. Proving intent can be super tricky. But the court, they pointed to a few specific pieces of evidence that convinced them that race was the main driving force in Georgia's 11th district.
So let's get into it. What were those clues? What made the Supreme Court think Georgia was, messing around with race when they drew that 11th district?
Well, the first thing was just, I mean, staring everyone right in the face, the shape of the district. Remember, we're talking about this 260-mile-long district snaking all over the
It
state.
was crazy, yeah.
The court even called it a geographic monstrosity, which, in legal terms, that's not a good thing.
Not a compliment.
Yeah.
Yeah. But couldn't Georgia argue that they were, I don't know, just connecting communities with similar interests? Like maybe those communities, even if they look weird on the map, maybe they had something in common.
They did try that, actually,
Yeah.
but the court wasn't convinced. The court pointed out that there wasn't really any evidence to suggest that those communities shared like common interests. besides race, of course. Plus, and this is important, there were records showing that Georgia had actually rejected other plans. Plans that would have kept communities together better, but still would have had a similar level of minority representation. So it really looked like they went out of their way to choose the most, like, convoluted path.
So the shape itself was suspicious, like a big warning sign.
Yeah.
What else did they look at?
Well, the real clincher was in the legislative record. There were statements from lawmakers, you know, admitting that their main goal was to create a third majority minority district, even if it meant ignoring, you know, the usual rules about how you're supposed to draw districts.
Wow. So they basically admitted that race was the most important thing. Sounds like an open and shut case, right?
Yeah, pretty damning for sure. And it's important to remember all of this was happening, you know, with the Department of Justice watching closely.
Oh, yeah, right.
Georgia was under a lot of pressure to create districts that would satisfy the DOJ, to comply with the Voting Rights Act.
Right, right.
They didn't want to be accused of discriminating against minority voters.
Yeah, so I'm starting to see how tricky this all gets. It's like you're trying to be fair and make sure minority voters have a voice.
Right.
But at the same time, you don't want to use race as like a tool to give some people an unfair advantage.
You've got it. And the court in Miller v. Johnson, it seems like they were saying, look, following the Voting Rights Act is important.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you can just go around drawing racially gerrymandered districts. They saw what Georgia did as like a, I don't know, a knee-jerk reaction to what the DOJ was saying. It wasn't a genuine effort to actually balance all the different things that are supposed to go into drawing districts.
But hold on, wasn't the DOJ itself pushing for, like, what they called a Max Black district?
Yeah.
So wouldn't that have been a valid reason under the Voting Rights Act?
That's a great question. It gets to the, like, the core of one of the big distinctions the court made.
Okay.
They said the Voting Rights Act, sure, is designed to protect minority voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean states have to create as many minority districts as they can.
Mm-hmm.
They actually saw the DOJ's Max Black policy as going too far. So the court was saying the DOJ, the ones in charge of enforcing the Voting Rights Act, they were actually going too far. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it was a big deal. The court basically said that complying with a policy that's unconstitutional, even if it's coming from the DOJ, you can't use that to justify drawing a district a certain way.
Mm.
Just because someone with authority tells you to do something, it doesn't make it right. You know, it's like that old saying, just following orders isn't a good enough excuse.
Right, right. This reminds me of another big Voting Rights Act case, Thornburg v. Gingles.
Yeah.
How did the court differentiate or like set apart Miller v. Johnson from that case?
Oh, that's a great point, actually, because it shows how subtle this area of the law can be.
Yeah.
So in Gingles, the court said it was okay to create majority-minority districts. It was necessary to fix, you know, a proven history of discrimination.
Right. So race was a factor in that case, but it was okay because it was addressing a real problem.
Exactly. But in Miller v. Johnson, the court didn't see that same justification.
Okay.
They thought Georgia had gone beyond what was needed to comply with the Voting Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
They had used race as the main factor, and that violated the Equal Protection Clause.
So it sounds like the main point here is that context really matters.
Yeah.
It's not just about whether race was considered. It's about why and how it was considered. And the courts are going to look at those decisions very carefully.
You got it. That's what makes Miller v. Johnson such a key case, especially for lawyers and law students.
Mm.
It set this big precedent for challenging racially gerrymandered maps.
Yeah.
And it gave a framework for figuring out when race crosses the line from being, you know, a permissible factor to an unconstitutional one.
Right. Okay, so we've been talking about the majority opinion. But I know some of the justices disagreed with the decision.
They did.
Not everyone agreed. Right.
Right, yeah. This case definitely exposed some, you know, some pretty deep divisions within the court. And those dissenting opinions, they're really important. They give a different perspective on the majority's reasoning.
So let's talk about those dissents. What were the main concerns that the justices who disagreed had?
Well, Justice Stevens, he argued that the white voters who brought the case, they didn't actually have the right to sue.
Really?
Yeah. He believed they hadn't actually been harmed because their votes hadn't been, like, directly weakened. Basically, his view was, you know, these white voters, they can still vote. So what's the big deal?
Hmm. So he didn't see it as a real violation of their rights.
Right. But the majority, they disagreed. And their reasoning is important. They said that being put into a racially gerrymandered district, Even if you can still vote, that's enough of an injury to give you the right to sue.
Oh, that's interesting. So you don't have to prove that you were literally stopped from voting to challenge a districting plan? It's just the fact that your district was drawn in a way that put race first, that's enough to claim you were harmed.
And then you have Justice Ginsburg's dissent. She was worried about the courts, getting too involved. She thought this decision would lead to a ton of lawsuits and make the courts interfere too much in the redistricting process, which is something that's usually left to the states.
Right. So she was more for a hands-off approach, recognizing that states are the ones who are supposed to draw district lines for the most part.
And Justice Ginsburg also brought up something that's really at the center of the debate about race and equality. She argued that focusing so much on the predominant factor test, it ignored how important it is to consider, using race-conscious solutions to fix historical injustices. She thought this ruling could actually hurt the progress that had been made in making sure minorities are represented.
So even though Miller v. Johnson was decided a while ago, it seems like it's still a really relevant and thought-provoking case, especially now, as we're still dealing with how complicated race and representation are in our democracy.
Absolutely. It's a case that makes us face some really hard questions, like how do we make sure everyone has an equal voice in our political system? How do we make racial fairness and equal treatment under the law work together? Those are big questions that we're still working on, and Miller v. Johnson is a key part of that discussion.
Okay, so we've really broken down the arguments in Miller v. Johnson and talked about the impact of the decision, but I want to zoom out a little bit. Look at the bigger picture. What's the legacy of this case? I mean, it was decided back in 95. Is it still relevant today?
Well, it's interesting because Miller v. Johnson didn't just kind of fade away, It actually became a really important case in redistricting law. It's been cited in so many cases since then. And it's really shaped how lawyers approach these cases and how courts make decisions about gerrymandering.
So lawyers and judges are still using this case as a guide. It's not just like an old case that nobody cares about anymore.
Oh, definitely not. Miller v. Johnson gave everyone this framework for analyzing claims of racial gerrymandering, and courts still use that framework today. The problems that it tackled are still around. We're still trying to make sure that the Voting Rights Act is upheld, that minority voters are protected. But at the same time, we want to make sure that race isn't being used to manipulate the system to give certain groups an unfair advantage.
It just shows you that the law is always changing, always evolving. It has to adapt to new challenges and reinterpret old precedents in light of, what's going on now. And sometimes it's messy.
Oh,
You've
absolutely.
got these competing values and interests, and trying to find that balance, that's really, really hard.
It is. One of the things I think Miller v. Johnson made clear is that just because a district has a majority of minority voters, that doesn't automatically mean it was the result of racial gerrymandering. The court stressed how important it is to look at the intent behind the lines, that predominant factor test we were talking about.
It's not enough to just say, oh, well, race was a factor here. You have to show that race was like the driving force behind the decision, that it was more important than all the other factors.
And proving that intent can be tough, you need to put together different pieces of evidence, like the shape of the district, statements from the lawmakers, and whether there were other less racially motivated ways they could have drawn the lines. That's what makes these cases so hard, but also so interesting.
It sounds like Miller v. Johnson is a case that every lawyer, especially anyone interested in election law, should really spend some time with. There's just so much to learn from it, even all these years later.
For sure. Yeah, it's definitely a must read. And it's not just about redistricting either. The principles in Miller v. Johnson, they apply to all sorts of issues dealing with race and the law, like affirmative action and housing policies. It reminds us that the courts are always dealing with these really tough questions, trying to strike a balance between different interests while also upholding the Constitution.
So where do we go from here? What does Miller v. Johnson tell us about the future of voting rights in America?
Well, if I had a crystal ball, that'd be great. But what I can say is Miller v. Johnson is still relevant today because it gets at some really fundamental issues that we're still trying to figure out as a country. Like, how do we make sure that everyone has an equal say, that every vote counts? How do we fix past wrongs without creating new kinds of discrimination? Those are big, important questions, and Miller v. Johnson is a big part of how we're trying to answer them.
Yeah, it seems like there's no easy answer, no solution that works for every situation. We have to keep asking those tough questions, keep pushing for a system that's more fair and just.
I completely agree. And that's where informed citizens, engaged lawyers, and a real commitment to democratic values come in. Cases like Miller v. Johnson, they remind us that the fight for equal representation never really ends. And it needs us to stay informed, to be active, and to be willing to engage with these complicated issues.
That's a great point. We've covered a lot today, from strangely shaped districts to big constitutional principles. Any last thoughts for our listeners as we wrap up this deep dive?
You know, I think the most important thing to remember about Miller v. Johnson is that it's not just about drawing lines on a map.
Yeah.
It's about the core of our democracy, about making sure things are fair, that everyone is treated equally. It's about creating a system where every single person's voice matters. And that's a fight that's worth having.
That's a really great way to put it. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into Miller v. Johnson. And to all our listeners out there, keep asking those tough questions, keep learning, and keep fighting for a better future for all of us.